Sports Desk at the Columbus Dispatch presents the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast. With your host, Ohio State basketball beat writer Adam Jardy. Now, the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Adam Jardy from the Columbus Dispatch. Today is Monday, March 11th, 2019. It's my official duty to welcome you into episode 72 of the Buckeye Extra Men's Basketball Podcast. Welcome to Jubilation City. And also, it's my official duty to say happy birthday to my dear wife, Brittany Jardy. Today is her birthday. She remains 29 and holding. She doesn't listen to the podcast, but I'm still not going to reveal her age because we can get back to her somehow. But it is my wife's birthday today. So happy birthday, Brittany. I love you. So we're sitting here today. We have officially moved from the regular season into the post season. Ohio State closed off the regular season on Sunday afternoon with a, I think it's fair to call it, shocking performance against Wisconsin, a 73-67 loss in overtime in a game that looked, for all intents and purposes, completely dead and buried until suddenly it was not at all dead and buried and the zombie rose from the ground and came roaring out, and Ohio State managed to force overtime, and it was a ridiculous game. I've officially flipped over my, I transcribe every interview that I do during the season, and I have different quote files for preseason, regular season, postseason. It makes it easier to find stuff. And my, in case you're wondering, my 2018-19 Ohio State regular season quote file, if I were to print it single space, would come out to 127 pages of unused quotes. And that's a total, according to Microsoft Word, of 91,508 unused words. So for all the things that I've written, think of all the things that I have not written. That is a lot of time banging away on a keyboard, just making sure that I'm bringing you, hopefully, the best quality product that you could enjoy. So we've got a lot to dive into here. We'll get into the game from yesterday, get into Ohio State's projection now for the Big Ten tournament, the NCAA tournament, where they sit in all the relevant rankings. The big thing, as of earlier this morning on a Big Ten men's basketball coaches teleconference, Ohio State coach Chris Holtmann confirmed that suspended sophomore center Caleb Wesson will return to the lineup for the Big Ten tournament after serving what now has amounted to a three-game suspension. The Buckeyes obviously lost all three of those games and find themselves in a very precarious situation on the NCAA tournament bubble, but they will have Caleb Wesson back for Thursday's Big Ten tournament game against Indiana at Chicago's United Center. So we'll dive into that. We'll dive into, like I said, what happened on Sunday and where Ohio State sits as it stands in regards to the NCAA tournament. It was Senior Day on Sunday. Before we go to or any further, I've kind of gone away from the shout-outs a little bit as of late, at least at the top of the podcast, but I felt like this was a good day to shout out the 10 Buckeyes who were honored on Senior Day, because not all these guys get recognized. I tried to get video of the entire pregame ceremony, and at least one guy ended up getting cut off because we were not instructed where we could or could not be as this was going on. So I was out there filming to make sure that I got every manager as well as every player, and we were informed very loudly and very sternly that we were standing where we were not supposed to be, and we had to move back significantly, and I had to turn the camera off while I did it. And so the result is that at least one or two guys got cut off at the beginning, and I apologize to those guys because I was intending to get everybody. But so to make up for that, shout out to the 10 players and managers and support staff that Ohio State recognized on Senior Day. That would be John McCausland, manager; Luke Gebbie, manager; Austin Rector, manager; Willis Day, manager; Griffin Stanley, manager; David Aaron, video specialist; Greg Oden, student assistant coach; Keyshawn Woods, graduate transfer guard; Joey Lane, senior guard; and CJ Jackson, transfer senior guard. So shout out to those 10 guys for their time at Ohio State, whatever it might have meant to them. I know what my time at Ohio State meant to me. So best of luck to them going forward. Thanks for the memories. I want to remind everyone you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes by searching Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast, and that way you don't miss anything. This time of year, they're coming at you fast and furious, so you want to make sure that it just pops right up on your phone or computer or however you listen to your podcast. So please make sure you're subscribed. While you're subscribing, please leave a favorable review, five-star review, five-star comment, anything along those lines. Any combination of five-star, favorable, and review would be appreciated. So please, if you would, a little bit of love helps, especially this time of year when we're all sleep-deprived and just trying to make it through March. So we're going to get into all of Sunday's happenings and what lies ahead. But first, check this out. You have to stand behind a statement like the best buying experience in the business. Rosati Windows believes the right way to do business is really pretty simple. You have to be honest, you have to have integrity, and you have to care about what the customer is telling you and respond accordingly. Mike Rosati realizes that people have options when choosing replacement windows, which is why he trains all of his employees on the principle that the customer always comes first. Everyone who works at Rosati Windows cares about what they do and the product they put out, from sales through manufacturing to the installation, and all the way down to when they peel that last piece of film off the window. They're not going to leave your home until everything is right. It's this sort of commitment that Rosati Windows can proudly stand behind a statement like, Rosati Windows is the best buying experience in the business. All right, we're back. So here's where Ohio State sits now at the end of the regular season. Ohio State is 18-13 overall, finishes 8-12 in the Big Ten. With the number 8 seed in the tournament, we'll play 9 seed Indiana on Thursday morning for the right to play number 1 seed Michigan State on Friday. Ohio State, as of Monday morning, Ohio State is number 55 in the net rankings, which is down a couple more spots. Indiana is actually number 51 in the rankings, and Nebraska is actually ahead of Ohio State in the net rankings. This is a quadrant two game for both teams as far as all the net rankings go. Ohio State is number 46 in the Sagarin rankings, number 44 in the KenPom.com rankings, number 41 in the BPI, and those are the metrics that are listed on the official team sheets. Now, I want to remind everybody again, because I was listening to the radio recently, and I heard some of the analysts ranting about how Ohio State at the time, 8-11 in the Big Ten, how no team that's 8-11 in its conference has any business being in the tournament, and that record should preclude them from being in the tournament. I want to remind everybody again, the conference tournament record does not appear in any way, shape, or form on any of the materials that the NCAA selection committee will use to decide who makes the tournament. We can sit here and we can maybe collectively agree or disagree that a team with a sub 500 conference record does or does not deserve to be in the tournament, but it is a fact that the committee does not care about that. That is zero bearing on whether Ohio State will or will not make the tournament. So please, everybody, let's try to keep that in mind going forward and make sure that we are informed as we try to decide whether or not teams deserve to make the tournament or not. Yes, Ohio State's 8-12 Big Ten record is not great. It's certainly better than 5 or 6 of the other teams. I'm bad at my math, but at 8-12, yes, the you would like the record to be better. I'd pick them to go 10-10 this year. Although I will say I did pick them to go 18-13 overall. So I had the overall record dead on. And as I think about the differences in my two projection or my two picks at the beginning of the season, I'm pretty sure that I had them between Cincinnati, Creighton, and UCLA. I think I assumed they would win one of those three, so they obviously won all three of those. And then I also had them beating between Rutgers, Illinois, and Northwestern on the road. I had them probably winning two of those three, and they obviously those were some tough losses there. So I think that explains for the discrepancy in the Big Ten record. But yes, I did have them at 18-13, so I'll pat myself on the back here and then move forward. In Joe Lenardi's ESPN bracket released Monday morning, so this will be different and fluid every day from here until we have a bracket in our hands on Sunday, but they are the last team projected into the NCAA tournament, and Indiana is the first team projected to miss the tournament. In Joe Lenardi's bracket, it has Ohio State versus North Carolina State in Dayton in a play-in game for the right to face Marquette in Hartford as a 12 seed. Ohio State, NC State, there would be plenty to write about there. You've got former Buckeye Braxton Beverly, who was very briefly a Buckeye just for a couple of weeks until the coaching change happened. And you also would have Derek Funderburk, who now goes by DJ Funderburk, who's averaging almost 10 points a game for the Wolfpack this year and would undoubtedly be helping this Ohio State team if he had been able to remain eligible when he was going through his redshirt season. But he obviously ultimately transferred out of the program. I think we've covered it on here, but transferred out of the program, ineligible, which is something you don't really see very often from a guy who is a redshirt. But he's obviously a very talented player. That'd be an interesting. There'd be some intrigue there if Ohio State played NC State in the tournament. As of Sunday morning, so this would be before the loss to Wisconsin. Jerry Palm over at CBS had OSU as an 11 seed in Jacksonville playing number 6 seed Buffalo. John Gassaway's Bubble Watch over on ESPN, updated Sunday after the loss, says this about the Buckeyes. With losses in their past 3 games and 6 of the last 8, the Buckeyes have played themselves into jeopardy. The absence of Caleb Wesson for those last 3 games due to suspension certainly didn't help matters. Now OSU has dropped all the way to the number 11 line in the mock brackets. Ohio State will next face Indiana in the Big Ten tournament, and a loss for Chris Holtmann's men would leave them 18-14 after an 8-12 run through the conference season. That's probably good enough to sneak this team into the field, given that the 18 wins includes the win at Cincinnati in the first day of the season. Even so, OSU should be following the doings of potential bid thieves nationally with very close attention. So that's an interesting perspective there, that win or lose, Ohio State could make it into the tournament. I think it's about as close as you could get right now, and I do think that the difference could have been just something as simple as if you win at Northwestern like you were supposed to, or if you didn't lose at Rutgers earlier in the season, or just avoiding one of the losses in the Big Ten that they took, and instead of being 8-12, just being 9-11, and instead of being 18-13, you'd be 19-12. going into the Big Ten tournament. Because you have to assume at this point Ohio State's not going to win the Big Ten tournament. I don't think that's being too negative. I think that's being realistic. I don't know that Ohio State, after you finish eighth in the Big Ten, in the matter in which they've played for significant stretches this season, particularly against the teams at the top of the conference, I don't think it's realistic to think Ohio State's going to go to Chicago and roll through the Big Ten tournament. Stranger things have happened, but Ohio State, like I said, will open here against Indiana. And I actually think this is a somewhat favorable draw for Ohio State. KenPom projects a 65-64 Indiana win, gives OSU a 48% chance to win. But I do think the way that Ohio State played against Indiana, I think that they match up well. When you think about teams that they could have maybe drawn on the first day, if you're Ohio State, I think you would rather play Indiana than Penn State. I think you'd rather play Indiana than Illinois. I think you'd rather play Indiana, maybe even than Rutgers. I think Ohio State would like another shot at Northwestern with Caleb Wesson, because to me there's no doubt that Ohio State is a better team than Northwestern, but they did suffer through one of the worst offensive showings they've had in quite some time in that game. So maybe you don't want any part of that. But I do think, as far as trying to play a game against a team that is also fighting for its tournament life, I think that's a decent matchup for Ohio State. And then honestly, when you look at the top of the Big Ten, and you look at the teams that they could be facing on that second day, I do think that even though they're 0-2 and even though they only scored 13 points in the second half up in East Lansing, I think that Ohio State matches up as well with Michigan State as any of the other teams at the top of the conference. I don't think Ohio State wants anything to do with Michigan. I don't think you want anything to do with Maryland. I'm not sure you want anything to do with Purdue. Not that I think Ohio State would lose by 35 points again if they played Purdue, but I don't like that matchup for them in a situation like this. So who knows? I did see... Michigan State coach Tom Izzo did say today that Nick Ward is apparently expected to return for the Big Ten tournament as well. So maybe we'll get another Caleb Wesson Nick Ward matchup on Friday in Chicago. So we'll see there. And for those of us who haven't been paying attention, after losing 12 of 13 in the middle of the season, Indiana closed the regular season with a 4-game winning streak that included a double overtime home win against Wisconsin, a home win against Michigan State, road win at Illinois, and a home win against Rutgers. So the Hoosiers will come in having won four straight and feeling pretty good about themselves. We did have Archie Miller was on the teleconference earlier in the day as well. He said that they would be preparing for Caleb Wesson to play. He said, we're just assuming he's going to be there. The last time we played them at our place, they were able to come out on top. They made some key plays late. It was a really, really tough game to play in. I expect the same thing. They're a really, really good team. Called Ohio State an NCAA tournament team. He was asked about his team overall and sort of just steadying the ship. I mean, when you lose 12 of 13 in the middle of the year and everything was going poorly for Indiana, I mean, things were spiraling out of control. I mean, you start hearing how upset the fans were, and you start to wonder, you know, are you wasting the one-and-done year of a Romeo Langford? So I asked Archie about that today. He said, I think we felt like we had a group that we could play really hard and play a lot of different types of combinations of people. That got derailed from day one. We've had season-ending injuries. We've had concussions. We've had suspensions. We've had a lot of things where we haven't been able to get that chemistry. We've just become a deeper team here of late. Had more guys getting into the game, which helps morale. No question, if you watched us here these last 3 or 4 weeks, you'd say that team right there is playing hard. They look like a good team. At the end of the year, that's all you hope for. Some of what we've gone through has made us a tougher group. It's made us a more together group. So I think that you'll probably see a little bit, maybe a little bit higher scoring game than what we saw Ohio State and Indiana. I mean, that would look like two teams trying to slog their way to a 50-49 win, and ultimately Ohio State won, but it was the final. 55-52, not the prettiest game of basketball. Significant droughts for Ohio State in both halves in that game. I think Indiana's playing better than they were at that time of the season. You can see that they're playing with a little bit more purpose, and it will be interesting now to see how the return for Caleb Wesson, how Ohio State handles that. So, like I said, we get the news today that he is back. There's a couple of questions that immediately come to mind, and I mean the first one, okay, well where's Caleb's conditioning going to be? Throughout his career here, his 2 years at Ohio State, Chris Holtman has consistently said that he's a guy that they have to stay on top of him with this conditioning. He needs to keep playing in games significantly. If he doesn't, it gets really hard for him to play at a high level or an optimal level as far from a conditioning standpoint. So that was addressed on the teleconference today. He said, I don't think we can expect too much, right? We've got to be careful not to expect too much, but it's obviously nice to have him back. it is a concern regarding his conditioning. Anytime you have a guy, if he's off a couple days, we're worried about his conditioning, much less 14 days. Having said that, trust me, he has done early morning workouts and afternoon workouts and sometimes twice a day conditioning and basketball workouts throughout this stretch. I've no doubt in my mind they've been running the heck out of Caleb Wesson since he's been suspended during these three games. So there's maybe the first concern. Where is his conditioning? Next question is, how does he reassemble or reacclimate back onto the team? Without him, Ohio State has not been able to play even remotely similarly to how it plays with him on the court. They've had to tweak and alter and change and cajole and stretch and everything they can possibly do to try to juggle this lineup and juggle these rotations to get some more offense. And it's mostly not worked. It did work. Ohio State finally, with his backs to the wall against Wisconsin here on Sunday, you finally saw that offense really hit a gear that it had not hit in quite some time. They were down 22 points with 7:14 to go in the game until C.J. Jackson hit a three with 6:56 left, and then that started just an unbelievable run to close the half. But I say that to illustrate the point that this offense has struggled significantly in his absence. And now that he is back, you just wonder how quickly can they flip that switch back? Is it going to be seamless? Does he come back in and immediately look like the player that he was starting to look like recently? I mean, he had gone through the foul troubles early, but seemed, going into the suspension, was playing some of his best basketball of the season, really. He had 22 in the win against Northwestern, which was, he was 8 of 14, 5 of 5 from the line, 8 rebounds. The Iowa win, obviously we talked a lot about Justin Arns going off for 29 in that game, but Caleb had 18 and 11. That was his fourth double-double of the season. He was really starting to emerge again after kind of a mid-season lull. How does he fit back into the lineup now? Can they play with him and have him anchor the post? And does that force teams to sag off Ohio State shooters? Do we see their three-point shooting and maybe make a turn? They did not shoot particularly well without him. I think they were 5 for 45 from 3 in their first two games going into the Wisconsin game without him. And then against Wisconsin, Ohio State finished 9 of 25 from 3 in the second half. Well, they were 1 of 8 in the first half. And they were 8 of 14 in the second half, which, again, goes to show that when you make shots, you do look like a better team. But that's the next question with Caleb. How quickly can he re-acclimate and re-assimilate into how Ohio State wants to play? Are there lessons that they learned without him that they can now use to make themselves a better team with him? Because obviously you had to learn how to play a certain way without him. And Chris Holtmann did say that it helped in practice that they knew he was coming back. They weren't practicing with uncertainty about when he was going to return. I don't know if I should say when, but they knew that he would be back at some point this season. It was announced when the suspension was announced that Caleb would be returning before the end of the season. So you were able to somewhat prepare for this simultaneously while you were trying to figure out how the heck you were going to try to get more than 50 points without him. So I'm interested to see how that plays out. My colleague Rob Aller had a great column today in the Dispatch. He was at the game last night, and the headline of the column, Caleb Wesson needs to be thinking about his actions. And in the column, which I highly encourage you to read on BuckeyeExtra.com, especially just click on the men's basketball tab, Robo makes the point of just what is going through Caleb's mind as he's watching this happen. I have no doubts that Caleb heard the fan yell at him at Northwestern when Ohio State had 2 points in the first 8 minutes of the game, and yelled, "This is all your fault, Caleb. We only have 2 points." I've no doubt that Caleb has heard that and has heard things like that. I did see him on, he was live on Instagram randomly the day after the Northwestern game, and he was getting hit up with questions about the suspension. Someone did ask him, "Why were you suspended?" And he said, "Some nuttiness. I was doing something I wasn't supposed to be doing." And so there's that. But it is fair to wonder, just from a mental standpoint, where is Caleb? And where are the rest of the players in regard to Caleb? Everything at the beginning of the suspension was about how the players still wanted him around. You know, he's one of their brothers. It's important to have him around. They wanted him there. They were embracing him. They've lost three games and had their NCAA tournament hopes all but dashed without him. And I think it's fair to wonder if there's anything in the way of resentment or frustration or disappointment, or I don't even know how you might categorize it, but I do wonder what that locker room truly feel, how that locker room truly feels about Caleb Wesson. They might be 100% on board and say, "You know what? Yeah, okay, you did something, but like we're over it. we're a team. I mean, like, we're all brothers, we're family. I mean, they say those things all the time. It's very possible that there's absolutely no ripple effect from this and that Ohio State seamlessly reinserts him into the lineup and off they go. But it is fair to wonder at this point how easily that transition might go and how he has mentally processed all of this. Because this is, I mean, to be suspended from your team at this point of the season, immediately on the heels of a win that seemed to really just punch the ticket to the tournament, that's a tough pill to swallow for anybody. And in a season where there's such a slim margin for error for this team, the fact that these guys have had to go and take some of these beatings that they've taken, I mean, the loss at Purdue and the loss at Northwestern, and then to rally against Wisconsin and still come up short, I could see a scenario where it would be human nature to have resentment toward the player who helped put you in those positions by his own actions. So I don't know how that's going to play out. I've been given no indication that there's anything but just excitement and enjoy that Caleb is back. I think any team that gets its best player back is happy for that. But I'm very interested to see how that plays out at the Big Ten tournament against Indiana in Chicago on Thursday. So again, please go check out Robo's column on BuckeyeExtra.com. He very eloquently, much more eloquently than I can, sort of put that all into words. It was worth mentioning as well that down the stretch, C.J. Jackson really gave Ohio State a big boost in the Wisconsin game, and I think that might be as relevant as anything else to come out of the game, because he had struggled at a significantly high level since the Illinois loss at home, when in 32 minutes he scored 17 points and had 5 rebounds. He had 2 assists and a season-high 7 turnovers. So that was not a great night, but at least he was scoring and giving Ohio State something at the offensive end, even if he kept turning it over. Since that, he suffered an ankle injury, and he suffered a shoulder injury. Say that 10 times fast. So he played in 5 of the last 6 games leading into the Wisconsin game. And in those 6 games, now this, mind you, this is Ohio State's second leading scorer, and the last 2 of these games were without their leading scorer. C.J. Jackson had averaged 6 points a game. He was shooting 28.6% from the floor and 27.3% from 3. Now, for his career, coming into the Wisconsin game, he's averaging a clean 10 points a game, shooting 36.8% from 3 and 40.9% from the field. So his numbers and his production had dipped significantly, and they needed somebody to step up and finally do something and play with some urgency as that Wisconsin game is getting out of hand, and it was C.J. C.J. and Keyshawn. Keyshawn Woods also had almost as much to do with it as anything, because you saw these guys realizing that their backs were against the wall, that their season was on the line, their careers were are running out, and C.J. responded. He played 40 minutes. He goes off for 22 points. He drew 8 fouls. They needed that. 15 of those points came in the second half. He hit shot after shot. He was getting in the lane. He was drawing fouls, getting to the line. I think you can see the shoulder injury is definitely still bothering him. That's how he goes 6 of 11 from the free throw line, which, you know, he makes one more of those, and if ifs and buts were candy and nuts and all that. But you know, he's a 76% free throw shooter. This year he's a 79% free throw shooter, and he goes 6 of 11 in a game that ends up going to overtime. You would normally expect that CJ would shoot a little bit better, but it looks like his motion just looks a little bit off to me from having watched him for 3 years. Not that he's always had the cleanest or smoothest shooting motion, but I think you can tell that there's still some discomfort there that he's still trying to find ways to play through. He was able to put that aside down the stretch and find ways to impact the game, and I think that is as important as anything else coming out of that Wisconsin game. Obviously, it still goes down as a loss, and there's certainly no moral victories at this point in the season, but I did think that the fact that they found a way to rally, I mean, that game was, like I said, it was dead and buried. I mean, they came out at halftime, and they were trailing 26-16. So you're coming off yet another just brutal half of basketball at the offensive end. And they weren't terrible defensively, but they weren't as good as they needed to be. But you're not going to win when you score 16 points and a half. Like you're not going to go into halftime against a Big Ten team leading 16-15 and feeling good about yourself. So Ohio State at halftime against Wisconsin in 5 halves without Caleb had shot 27.3%, 38.5%, 14.3%, 36.1%, and then 20.7%. Those were Ohio State's shooting percentages by half in the five halves without Caleb Wesson. And then you go into the half, or you come out of the half down 10 and immediately give up five quick points to Wisconsin. Holtmann calls timeout 49 seconds into the game and just lights into his players. Hand over his mouth, so we couldn't read what he was saying. I talked to my dad. He said he thinks there's probably a lot of golly and gee whizzes in there. So that's a perspective from one coach. But he lit into the players, and it didn't immediately produce any results. They still, you know, from being down 15 there, they cut it to 12, and then Wisconsin pushed it back to 23. So they're down 23 with 16:05 to go before they start to kind of climb their way back. And even then, you're down 20. So you're down 23 with 16 minutes to go, and then you're still down 22 with 7 minutes to go. And then against all odds, they find a way. You know, they close it. It was a 27-5 run to close the game to force overtime, and they did end up having the final shot. Final shots, I should say, although Keyshawn wasn't officially credited with one. But we had a little debate in the media room after the game about what Ohio State's best shot should have been. They took possession, tied with 29 seconds left. Ethan Happ was called for an illegal screen on CJ Jackson at midcourt, and Wisconsin just melted down. It was unbelievable to watch. And for all the grief that all the grief that Value City Arena gets for being a mausoleum and for not being loud, which it is, that's how it normally is. It was loud. It was rocking. People were into it. With every bucket, you could feel the energy grow. The fans that were leaving turned around. It was really something to watch. And then Ethan Happ, of all players, gets called for an illegal screen at midcourt, giving Ohio State the ball back with 26 seconds or 29 seconds in a tie game. So Ohio State dribbles the ball down for a little bit, and then Wisconsin fouls about 6 seconds left, which is something you would expect. So then Ohio State basically drew up a play, and they wanted CJ had the option to make a read. Do you drive or do you shoot? And he said he saw that his guy was playing off him just a little bit. He didn't think he was going to be able to drive and draw contact or get to the rim, so he took the shot like he has so many times in his career, and a lot of these shots have gone in for him. This one only found air. He said it was a little bit off balance, and obviously he would have liked to, you know, get a different shot. But we had a debate as far as what was Ohio State's best shot in that scenario. What do you do? What are you looking for? And I think in an ideal scenario, you are looking to drive. I think that's most coaches, I would say, 9 times out of 10, your team's best shot. Get the ball to somebody in the perimeter and try to make them force the issue. Make them call a foul, make them make contact, get to the rim, get to the line, try to find a way to win. And I think that ordinarily that is the best way to try to win in a situation like this. I also think that knowing this Ohio State team like I do, I think that CJ's shot was the best shot that they could get in that situation. CJ had been aggressive, uncharacteristically aggressive, in getting to the rim and trying to draw fouls in this game, but that's not a strong point for anybody on this team to find a way to just put the ball down and get to the rim. And it's been an issue all year. They're one of the least fouled teams in the Big Ten, and I think that that all tells you that their best chance to find a way to win was to get a CJ Jackson three-pointer, or honestly, in this case, maybe a Justin Arns three-pointer. That kid just shoots the ball with so much confidence, and he did knock down. He had 9 points in this game, but I firmly believe that that was the best shot they could have gotten. I understand the counter to that, but that's, I think, knowing this team, I think that was their best hope to find a way to get a shot at the buzzer and win. I really thought Keyshawn's heave at the buzzer was good. It came up, I mean, maybe a foot short, but it was dead on, and it was from half court. And I thought, boy, like that would have, I mean, that was, that would have been, I mean, just how do you put that up with Matt Sylvester? If that shot goes in, I mean, that'd be a top three moment in history of that arena, hands down. But then they obviously just kind of run out of gas down the stretch in overtime, and ultimately come up short in a game that really would have punched their chances or punched their bid to the tournament, I think. So it was senior day. It's worth mentioning, in addition to the three guys who were honored, Joey Lane, CJ Jackson, and Keyshawn Woods, and by three guys, I mean the three active players. It's worth mentioning the five, or not maybe not by name, but there were five guys who should be on that roster. And when you think about all the issues that this team has and the lack of depth that they have and why the roster is where it is, well, there's five guys who aren't there. And honestly, if those five guys are there, CJ Jackson's not there. Keyshawn Woods is probably not there either. It could have been a there's a bizarro alternate scenario where it's a very different senior day for Ohio State, and you've got Jaquan Lyle and Austin Grandstaff and A.J. Harris and Mickey Mitchell and Daniel Giddens all there on senior day. But instead, they've all dispersed their various ways. And I did see that Austin Grandstaff is now playing for like a community college. So I guess he hasn't completely given up on the basketball career. He is trying to seemingly make a go as a rapper. But he did go from Ohio State to Oklahoma to DePaul to now a community college in Texas, which is where he's ultimately from. I did want to a quick shout out to Joey Lane, because it was really cool that he did get the start on senior day. He got a great look. Ohio State's first possession of the game came off on a curl and had a wide open three-pointer that looked good, and I thought for sure that was going down, but ultimately it rimmed out. And but what a memorable day for Joey. All three of the seniors got emotional to varying degrees. They all got to address the crowd after the game. It was the most emotion I've seen from CJ Jackson. I mean, he was legit crying. And that's, I mean, he's a pretty quiet guy, pretty straightforward guy. So you could tell how much this is all meant to him. I thought it was neat. Joey Lane always does the pregame handshakes. If you're paying attention when Ohio State starters are being announced, they come off the bench and they high-five their teammates who make like a little tunnel. And then waiting at the end is Joey Lane. And he has an individualized handshake for each player. And when he was announced as a starter, I thought, well, who's going to take his spot? So Joey ended up being the last starting player that they announced, which was pretty cool. So he got the loudest ovation, and he walked out, and Dwayne Washington took his place. Dwayne had different handshakes for everybody, and when Joey walked out, he had his customary towel draped around his neck, hashtag towel gang, and he walked up to Dwayne, and he sort of bowed down, and Dwayne ceremoniously and with great care, deliberation, lifted it off his shoulders and put it on his own shoulders. It was like it was the passing of the towel, if you will. And it was just, there's so many moments on senior day. There's so many things that happen. And then in a game like this, there's so many things to dive into and break down. But that, I just thought that was a really cool moment. And so kudos to Joey and kudos to Dwayne, because you could see, again, just how much a guy like Joey has meant to this team, even though he does not really play much. You can just tell how much this all meant to him. So cool moment there. I'm sure, hopefully, if you were at the arena, you caught it, because I would be surprised if it was on the broadcast. So now, having said all that, I got to get out of here because I got a lot of things to write, and I still have to go buy flowers for my wife before she gets home. So be heading to Chicago. I believe we'll have interviews on Tuesday, and I'm going to head to Chicago on Wednesday for the Thursday morning game. So you can expect a podcast, at least one from Chicago, as the tournament continues, regardless of, or depending on what happens and who they're playing and things like that. I mean, possibly multiple podcasts through the tournament. We'll just have to see what kind of run they put together, if any. Chris Holtman has not had a lot of success in conference tournaments, frankly, and Ohio State has not as of late either. I've had some quick down and backs when it's come to conference tournaments since I've been here. So we'll see. But I'm very excited to see now. There's just been so much intrigue with this season, and from the 12-1 start to where we are now and playing for a postseason berth. And now with Caleb back, there's just so much I'm interested to see how this unfolds going forward. So please make sure you're checking BuckeyeXtra.com. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast. And I will continue to bring you as much as I can, as quickly as I can, in as many different forms as I can over the coming days. So I'll definitely be listening on the way. I just got, there's a new Flight of the Conchords like release. It's a live album. I got the vinyl, three records for $30 that I bought like 2-3 months ago, it just finally shipped. And I've listened to it a little bit, but they're so funny that you really kind of have to devote your attention to it and not just have it on in the background. So I've been kind of saving that. I'm going to listen to that on the drive. Definitely keep spinning the new Weezer and a couple of other things. I'll report when I get to Chicago what helped get me through the drive. So stay tuned for that as well. And having said all that, now I'm officially going to get out of here because, like I said, I got to go buy some flowers. As always, you can send along your questions, your comments, your love notes, your hate mail, and otherwise constructive criticism to me at Adam Jardy on Twitter or ajardy@dispatch.com. Thank you, as always, for listening. Thank you to Patrick the Podfather for pushing the gears and making me sound better, and for this time muting his phone so there is no rude distractions or interruptions, because I hate when my train of thought derails. So thanks, as always, and until next time, thanks.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.